and this is KPCW. It's 8:06. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's Tuesday, feeling like a Monday, the 27th of May. Currently 53 degrees under mostly sunny skies, 54 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Good morning, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for your Tuesday afternoon for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at a mixture of sun and clouds as we go throughout the day. High temperatures in Park City will climb into the mid-70s across the area. And we will have a chance of a few isolated pop-up showers developing with the daytime. Heating will be into the low 80s for the Heber Valley as we go throughout this afternoon. As we go into your Wednesday, look for partly cloudy skies. Again, temperatures starting off in the upper 40s to near 50. And we'll see a chance of a few afternoon pop-up showers and rumbles of thunder developing. Highs will climb into the mid-70s in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the lower 80s across the Heber Valley. As we go into your Thursday, partly cloudy skies, we start to see just mainly a mixture of sun and clouds throughout the day. Temperatures will be in the upper 70s for highs in Park City, and we'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid-80s there in the Heber Valley. The weekend forecast, get ready for a big ridge of high pressure to create lots of sunshine as we go throughout the weekend, and some high temperatures. Our friends in Park City climbing into the low to mid 80s as we go throughout your Saturday and Sunday with all that sunshine and very warm temperatures well above average. Heber Valley, we're looking at high temperatures climbing into the upper 80s on Saturday. How about high temperatures officially getting into the lower 90s in the Heber Valley as we get towards your Sunday? So, yeah, it is definitely going to start to feel more like summertime around here as we go into the weekend. We stay pretty warm as we go into your Sunday with lots of sunshine. Temperatures starting off into the 50s here across the area, but we'll see those highs into the low 80s in Park City again as we get into your Sunday afternoon with high temperatures climbing near 90 degrees once again in the Heber Valley. We are tracking the potential of another storm system moving our way as we head towards the beginning of next week, and that could bring us a chance of isolated scattered showers and thunderstorms by the time we get towards your Monday into Tuesday. Highs will be in the 60s on Park City, and highs will be in the low to mid 70s in the Heber Valley here. So we'll keep you updated on your forecast throughout the day. From the ABC Forecast Center, I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County's and Park City's stormwater managers, Kelsey Christensen and Christine Williams, with details on the annual Trails, Trash, and Tunes event. Also, Deputy County Manager Jenna Young on plans for the future of Recycle Utah. Also be talking with Park City Troublemakers Renee Hall and Jenny Floor with details about their annual spring concert coming up. And Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff in with a monthly lodging update. Heber City Council members voted for more flexibility when using fees in lieu, an affordable housing tool. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports the city promised it will continue to work closely with the county housing board.
State law forbids local governments from requiring affordable housing as part of development agreements unless it's individually negotiated. Usually, Heber City offers the developer an option to pay a fee in lieu or money instead of affordable units. That money can then be used to build the housing elsewhere, often closer to services like grocery stores or transit stops. Current code directs that any fees in lieu automatically go to the Wasatch County Housing Authority, not Heber City. City Attorney Jeremy Cook said at the Heber City Council meeting May 20th, changing the ordinance will give Heber more flexibility to invest directly in affordable housing projects. Despite assurances that the city is committed to working with the Housing Authority, some board members protested the move, saying it would weaken the countywide body. Kent Shelton, a member of the Housing Authority board, said he was worried the change would leave the Housing Authority toothless, since Heber is such a major player.
I would just caution our city council not to jump the gun to say, well, I would like to see us work together rather than have everybody pull up stakes and say we're taking our dolls and dishes and going to a different sandbox.
Heber City leaders say they're not abandoning the Housing Authority. Cook and others hinted at work happening behind the scenes for a future affordable housing project.
When some of this comes to fruition, I think maybe the Housing Authority is going to recognize why we did this and benefits that are going to come to this, and hopefully money that's going to flow back to the Housing Authority.
Kendall Crittenden, a Wasatch County Council member and the chair of the Housing Board, said he wasn't convinced.
I don't understand how that same thing can't happen within the Housing Authority.
City leaders said they can't share what's being discussed in closed session, but they promised Crittenden that Heber's intent is to work closely with the board, not leave it behind. City Council Member Mike Johnston said to address the affordability issue in the Valley, all the local governments need to work together to achieve the area's housing goals.
It's a county problem, not a Heber City problem, though we are a major part of the solution.
Crittenden said Heber could push harder for more affordable housing and new developments, referencing annexations north of downtown in the past several years.
After the legislature a couple of years ago, bless their hearts, took away our ability to charge fee in lieu or require affordable housing, I sometimes wonder if you forget that if somebody's annexed in, you can ask about anything of them. And I don't think you always ask as much.
One thing both entities agree on is that the Valley is reaching a size where the current resources dedicated to addressing affordable housing aren't sufficient. Johnston noted there isn't ongoing funding for the Housing Authority the way there is for county services like the library or the fire district. It got money from fees in lieu prior to the change in state law, but that money is dwindling. He proposed adding an incremental property tax so the wealthiest county residents contribute more toward affordable housing.
I think that makes a real good sense because people that own a lot of wealthy Touhey, Victory Ranch, whatever property probably don't really do work here in our county. Yeah. They demand services and they don't provide any. You go down to the lowly people that are living in the apartments, they're providing all the services and they don't demand the same services. So that's to me is what is fair.
Another possible solution is hiring a director for the Housing Authority or contracting with experts dedicated to affordable housing to help meet the needs of the growing community. That would likely require the Housing Authority to seek funding from local governments around the county. The Heber City Council voted 4-0 to approve the change to the fee in lieu ordinance. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
The Summit County Stormwater Coalition is hosting its fourth annual Trails, Trash, and Tunes events this Saturday. On the phone with me, I have Summit County Stormwater Manager Kelsey Christensen. Also in the studio, Deputy Summit County Manager Jenna Young. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Okay, Kelsey, let's start with you and stormwater. Maybe just start by telling us what it is and why do we need somebody to manage it?
It's an event where we have a live band, a beer garden, and a food truck. Just try to make it more fun. But more than that, we want to reach out about topics such as sustainability, noxious weeds, public lands, stormwater, of course. Our bike share will be there. But this year, we're actually moving to a new location. We've been in Wanship for the past 3 years, and we got feedback last year to move it a little closer to Park City. So we decided on Silver Creek Park, Loomis Park, out in Silver Creek Village. It's a new development we have in the county, and we're excited to show people that area.
Okay, but again, back to just stormwater. I mean, why do we have a manager to manage stormwater?
Well, I would say first off would be the development that we have going on here. The biggest contaminant in the United States to water quality is sediment from construction sites. So we, for stormwater, have close to 300 construction permits, and we're trying to keep that sediment when they disturb the land for construction on site and not entering the waterway. But more than that, there's things, and this is what this event is about, what people can do themselves in the community to help stormwater. Things such as maintaining their car. If their car's leaking oil, then it gets on the ground and then it gets into the stormwater. Trash, dog poop, picking up your dog poop, that E. coli is not good for our waterways. Salt usage, I know that's typically from property management, but if you use salt on your driveway, just the timing of when you use that is really important.
Okay, so as you mentioned, it's happening Saturday at the Scott Loomis Park. Starting when?
The band starts at 12. It goes from 12 to 4. There will be a beer and band from 12 to 3. But the first 50 people that show up, the county is sponsoring lunch for them. So the early bird gets the worm. You show up, you get a free lunch voucher from Savory Kitchen.
Okay, so where does the cleanup part come into play?
It'll be anywhere around the county. If you clean up before you come, you'll get a ticket to the opportunity drawing, but mostly around that Silver Creek Village area. But we get that we might run out of trash this year because we ran out last year in Wanship. So we're also going to have some other interactive activities, such as a weed pull, fishing for contaminants in the stormwater fishing pond.
Okay. And the band is going to be who?
It's the Last Wild Buffalo. They are local to Logan, but they moved to Alaska. I got a chance to listen to them. I haven't seen them live, but Mountain Town Music picked them out. They kind of sound like a blend of, I don't know, the Abbott Brothers, Lumineers, and Blink-182. It's a little bit of bluegrass with a hint of punk, I think.
Okay. And you mentioned there's going to be food trucks and a beer garden. All of that is, other than the first 50 people, will have to be paid for?
Yes. After the first 50, you can buy your lunch from Savory Kitchen. And, of course, Offset will be there with whatever new beer they have a brewing.
Okay. And then talk to us a little bit about the educational activities.
So we'll have booths from Basin Rec, Recycle Utah, our sustainability department, Summit County Public Lands, Noxious Weeds, our Trout Friendly Lawns program, and the library will have a kids' corner, of course, where the kids can go read and color and hang out. There's a little park there for the kids, too. That's where the kids' corner will be. And then our Summit County Bike Share will be there with season pass giveaways.
Okay.
So if you visit any of the booths, then you get entered into the opportunity drawing.
And how many people usually turn out for something like this?
It's grown. Last year we had Pixie and the Party Grass boys come. So I think we had close to 300 last year. I don't know how many will show up. We're hoping for a lot, but we'll see.
Okay. Do you need to register at all, or?
You don't need to register, but if you visit our website, we appreciate it just so we can get a head count, have an idea. But
okay, that website being summitcounty.org?
Yes, summitcounty.org, and then the Trails, Trash, and Tunes.
Okay, and in terms of what people need to bring besides themselves?
Just bring themselves maybe a blanket. We'll have tables there. There is a couple canopies, but if it's super sunny, we might not have a lot of shade. So some sunscreen, a hat, shade if it's super sunny, or a rain jacket if it looks like it's going to rain.
Okay. Anything else you want to let people know about?
Nothing, just that we have some really great sponsors this year. Big Sky, or Blue Sky, has been our biggest spotter of the band, but we've got a lot of great prizes. We've got two GAs to the Song Summit, some golf at Promontory and Muni, Park City Yoga Collective. Just come participate and you can maybe win some good prizes.
Okay. All right, Kelsey, thanks.
Thanks.
Also in the studio with me, Deputy Summit County Manager Jana Young. Wanted to bring you in. Last we had talked, I mean, we've now heard from Recycle Utah that they've been basically given a date to vacate from their center in Bonanza Park to make way for some city construction projects there. And basically, I mean, even if they started building today, they really would not have a place to go by next September when they need to be out of that. So what's the plan from the county's point of view?
Yeah, thanks, Leslie. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. And I'm hoping, if you'll allow me, before we dive into the Recycle Utah questions, to just start by sharing with the public and you all the work and planning that the county is doing around solid waste within the county. To be quite candid with you, I don't think we've done a really good job on sharing this information with the community. And I want to make sure that people are aware of some of the programs and initiatives we've launched to increase waste diversion. Summit County now offers free drop-off services at our 3 Mile and Hennifer landfills for a wide variety of materials such as cardboard, electronic waste, mattresses, tires, batteries, bulk metal, refrigerants, and household hazardous waste, which is having a positive impact on our landfills. We've also installed a vertical baler and dirty materials recovery program at the 3 Mile landfill, which is collecting and recycling tons of cardboard that is showing up there on a daily basis. And we're also starting to focus more on food waste because it makes up about 50% of the airspace at the landfill. We recently signed an agreement with the Park City Community Foundation to expand their zero food waste initiative this summer. But we know we need to do more, as you alluded to in your introduction, in order to extend the lifespan of our landfills as long as possible and to avoid more costly alternatives in the future. And so, looking to that future, the county and Park City, in collaboration with Recycle Utah, are working together to come up with a strategy to not only continue, but to increase collecting cardboard, glass, and mixed recyclables countywide, starting as soon as next June, knowing that these changes are coming with Recycle Utah needing to vacate their current facility. And the focus of this strategy, and something we're deeply committed to, is expanding access to recycling options across the county, including in North Summit and South Summit. We know that asking residents to drive all the way into Park City for additional recycling services outside or beyond our curbside program is not sustainable, and in fact a deterrent for some. And so no matter where you live, we want to make sure that you have access to collection sites.
So where are these collection sites going to be?
We're still in that planning process right now, but we're looking at all the key areas in the county. We'll probably have a couple in the Snyderville Basin, some in Park City, and like I mentioned, North Summit and South Summit. But as I mentioned, no decisions have been made yet. We're very much in the exploration and study phases of that. The other piece of this that I also would be remiss if I didn't mention is we also have to look beyond next year and into the future. And so we have resurrected the internal working group of county and city staff to essentially do a refresh of the solid waste master plan that the county council adopted in 2018. And with that, taking new data and new information to establish new targets for waste reduction and waste diversion, and then associate actionable strategies to achieve those targets over the next 5, 10, 20 years and beyond.
So there's a reason that the Recycle Utah location is where it is in the light industrial zone. You know, it's like when you're dealing with garbage, essentially, right, that we're trying to recycle. It's stinky and it's messy and it's dirty. There's broken glass. There's trash. I mean, it's like, I guess it's like if you're going to put these in neighborhoods, how are they going to be ensured that, you know, it's not kind of a nasty place to live next to?
Yeah, I'm really glad you raised that, because that's also something we're thinking about when we talk about where to locate if we do want to pursue some type of larger regional facility, and exactly why the county is doing our due diligence around this issue. In terms of the satellite collections, as I mentioned, we're still in our study phase, but likely those would be on county property already, or at least in larger park and rides or what have you, where there's enough space for those bins and those trucks to get in. It'd be similar to the drop-off site you see right now at the Ecker Park and Ride. And part of that program is funding personnel to make sure we are cleaning those sites. You're right, when the glass pickup happens, it breaks and there's a mess. Right now, our public works teams are already helping to do that cleanup in addition to Recycle Utah. So that's one thing that we're looking at, maybe even partnering with Recycle Utah to do in the future, is helping to monitor these sites for contamination challenges, but also the cleanup effort. But ultimately, at the end of the day, we want to make these accessible to the public. And it's not unusual to have sort of remote type sites like this in, you know, closer to neighborhoods where people don't have to drive long distances in order to do their recycling.
So at this point, the county is taking this on, will be managing all of these collection sites, or what about those living within the 84060?
Yes, so I should stress that we are working in strong partnership with Park City Municipal Corporation on this planning effort, in addition to Recycle Utah. We really see this as a collaboration. We don't do anything in the county without partnership, and solid waste is no exception to that. We rely on our city partners, our nonprofit partners, and the community at large to help us solve this challenge. It truly is a community-wide challenge, and so that planning has involved. We've had just a handful of meetings so far at which Park City staff has been. We've also had larger discussions with some of the elected officials, including our elected officials and Recycle Utah, in trying to figure out these next steps. You know, it's not new. We've known for a while, at least since 2019, because it's been widely reported on your show as well as with local media, that Recycle Utah has outgrown its current site. And we've also known Park City's made its plans known that they want to establish an arts and culture district there. So we knew this was coming, and this is actually what prompted the city and the county together earlier in January to offer a 4-acre parcel to Recycle Utah for relocation, which is valued around $7 million on the improved land of the Gilmore parcel in the county, to set up operations. Now, Recycle Utah has made it clear to us that their vision around their future is changing somewhat, and they have expressed some reservations about that particular offer. And so we are moving forward with the understanding that something has to be done next year, and we want to make sure that not only are we able to continue recycling, but we're going to increase and expand those opportunities, and we're doing it in strong partnership with the city and Recycle Utah.
Yeah, so what's going on with the 4-acre parcel? Too small, just not centrally located? Or yeah, it's all falling on Recycle Utah to build anything on that 4 acres?
No, I think those details are still being worked out, and I think that offer is still on the table. It's a matter of, and I think it's best for you to hear directly from Recycle Utah and what their vision is. They have expressed to us, though, that they feel that solid waste is a municipal responsibility, and they really want the county and the city to step up more in this area. And that's exactly what we're doing in, with these planning efforts.
At the same time, though, doing kind of your own thing. I mean, you say it's a partnership, but what Recycle Utah believes is that there should be kind of some regional facility. Are you telling me that the county is not interested in that?
No, that's on the table. That's very much on the table. But as a public entity responsible for public dollars, we have to do our due diligence around that and making sure that we understand where's the best location for it. How are we going to finance it? How are we going to operate it? Does it even make sense in terms of our funding constraints and the size of our community and our waste diversion goals and our waste production goal or waste production numbers to have a facility like that? And we just haven't had the opportunity to really roll up our sleeves and dive into that specific proposal, which is why, again, I've mentioned this working group that we've resurrected to explore those strategies.
Yeah, I know. I guess I just don't buy that. Haven't had time because, again, we have known for years that Recycle Utah needed to move. And I guess it's just, it's no surprise that Recycle Utah is moving. It is surprising that they don't have a place to go.
Well, we've offered them a place to go, and we remain committed to working with them on what that looks like. I think the reason why we're so interested in this distributed satellite model, first of all, it was endorsed by Recycle Utah in their public meetings earlier this year. They've even asked us to apply for an EPA grant to help fund it, which we have done. And so we see that as maybe the easiest first step in this transition period. While Recycle Utah closes down its current facility so that we continue to collect and recycle those materials that they are currently collecting. We've already checked with Republic Services. It's something they could easily fold into their program under our existing contract. And so it's a good interim measure. As we keep emphasizing, you don't just build a $20 million facility overnight. This does take time to plan and to finance. And right now, all we have is Recycle Utah's study. And so the county needs to do its own due diligence around this as well.
So when do you expect to have, or at least to propose these satellite locations so that there can be a public input process as part of that?
Well, we're hoping pretty soon. We are continuing. We have another meeting set up with Recycle Utah in early June, and then our internal group will continue to meet after that. It's something, like I said, we're still ferreting out. No decisions have been made, despite what's been reported in the media. We are very much still in the exploration and study phases. We've not even had a chance to really run this concept by our elected bodies, both in the city and in the county. It's still at a staff level, really trying to understand the logistics and the costs and what that exactly would look like. And then the plan would be, at least on the county side, to offer a budget proposal for consideration in our 2026 process that would include these additional dumpsters and whatever costs to pull them and the other staffing needed to make that strategy successful.
Yeah, and I do know that Park City Municipal gives Recycle Utah, a community service grant or whatever it is every year. What's the county's budget line item for recycled utility?
Yeah, we do that as well. Thanks for bringing that up. It increases almost every year. We're around $85,000, $90,000 now that we provide to Recycle Utah on an annual basis, specifically for their community outreach and public education around recycling, as well as to support their twice annual hazardous household waste drop-off events.
So is there some thinking, though, that there it could be done less expensive if county and the city kind of took over operations and just left Recycle Utah out of it?
Well, our plan is not to leave Recycle Utah out of anything. You know, they are a very valued partner. They provide an important service. They have experience and expertise in solid waste management. We would be foolish not to engage them. But we also hear that they feel like this is a municipal responsibility, and the county is committed to working with them and the cities and the community at large to increase recycling opportunities across the county.
Okay. And any idea what the goal is right now? We know our diversion rate's about 12%. I mean, what would success look like?
That's exactly what this longer-term planning effort is intended to figure out. We now have a lot more information than we did back in 2017 when we first drafted that solid waste master plan. We have a better idea of what our projections are, the situation at the 3 Mile landfill as we've built new cells and what the capacity is there. We also, interestingly enough, also have new opportunities with new revenue sources. I want to give a huge shout out to the public for overwhelmingly approving the emergency services sales tax last November, which a portion of those revenues can be used for solid waste management as long as there's a tourism nexus. That also adds to this conversation and why I think we're able to advance more options now than maybe what we could before.
All right, tell me who's on this internal committee.
So right now it exists of or is comprised of the individuals who helped put the 2017 plan together, which includes myself, Emily Quinton, our sustainability manager. We also have Tim Loveday, our landfill superintendent, and John Angel, our public works director. And then we've also included the environmental health department at our health department. And then from the city side, we have their sustainability managers and personnel as well, Luke Carton and Celia. And then eventually, too, as we did in 2017, there will be a large stakeholder engagement and public engagement process around this as well, where we get feedback on these goals, these guiding principles, these targets, and these strategies that will also include Recycle Utah, as well as our business community, our school districts, the mayors from our eastern part of our county, and other community members.
Okay, so nobody from Recycle Utah initially on this committee then?
No, not as a core member, and they weren't in 2017 either, but because we have to get our kind of ducks in a row from a municipal perspective, but certainly they will be a key player in whatever proposals are presented.
Okay, Jan, anything else you want to say about this?
Just thank you for the opportunity to talk about this issue. I think if you take anything from this interview, please let it be that Summit County is committed to ensuring the community has access to more recycling options and is committed to working with critical stakeholders to do that. This is a community-wide challenge. It will take all of us, county, cities, nonprofit partners, and the community at large working together to improve recycling and extend the life of our landfills for years to come.
Okay. Deputy Summit County Manager Jenna Young, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
Well, the Park City Troublemakers present their annual spring concert in the studio with details. Two of the troublemakers, Renee Mox Hall, along with Jenny Floor. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Renee, we'll start with you. You can just tell us who the troublemakers are.
Well, in fact, right here at KPCW, they recently gave a community campfire detailing the history of troublemakers. And we began in 2012, and we are a 16-member, all-female a cappella ensemble. And we have been giving concerts here since 2012. Just recently, just yesterday, we were at the Memorial Day services at the cemetery with the VFW. And so we perform about town as well as the two concerts that we do annually.
Okay. And those concerts are kind of spring and then the holiday at the
Correct.
End of the year?
Correct. Yes.
All right. Tell me, is it always just 16 members?
It always is just 16.
And why is that?
Because it's four voices per part, and there are four parts. Sometimes we do divide into smaller parts still, perhaps as many as eight, but traditionally it's the first soprano, second soprano, first alto, second alto.
Oh, okay. That's how you call those are the parts.
Yes.
So it's like mezzo-soprano, that's the lower of the soprano group?
Correct, yeah. Yes.
Okay, so
yes.
They're the second soprano.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Jenny, tell us when and where is the concert?
The concert will be June 1st, this Sunday, at the Park City Community Church at 4 o'clock. My understanding is people can buy tickets. Renee, do you have a link to that or how people can get tickets?
Yes, they can go to the website, which is just parkcitytroublemakers.org. Mm-hmm. And there's an explanation of how to buy advance tickets on Venmo, which does save you $3. Yes, saves you $3 on an adult purchase. Or you can buy them at the door for $15.
Okay, otherwise 12 online.
Yes, that's correct.
All right, so what's on the repertoire?
There are a collection of songs from different genres. Mm-hmm. Again, yesterday on the Campfire Friday, they mentioned some of them, but we have two Beatles tunes. We have Sing, 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 which is kind of our theme this year, swingy, jazzy sound. That's a fun one. And we're ending with a popular one, Happy. We're trying to stay positive this year. It's been tough in many ways, and the music's uplifting, and we all feel good after we sing it. Quite sure.
It's okay.
Good. Yeah.
So do you ever do any auditions for it? I mean, are just people, once they're on, they kind of tend to stay on, huh?
Oh, we love it when they stay on, but obviously life does get in the way of that sometimes. So when there's a vacancy, we do audition someone to fill that space.
Okay. You also have somebody that kind of oversees all that you do. Who's that?
Correct. That's Colleen Earnshaw. She's our director. Then additionally, Ann Collette started this group, and she and Kristen Brown serve on the board. So the three of them are the people that I turn to when a question is to be answered.
Okay, and is it Colleen then that decides what songs are going to be sung?
She does, mm-hmm. And she has done such a fantastic job with music selection.
Mm-hmm. Really good taste.
Yes, and if I can point out that Jen and Colleen collaborated on an arrangement of a particular piece for this year called Broken Halos, and it's really quite beautiful. So I admire the ability that some of our members have.
Everyone has talent that comes to it, musically and otherwise, and it's such a joy to be a part of a bigger group and show up and just have that energy. It's just fantastic. It's just so great.
Tell me about the special arrangement. I mean, what did that entail?
Well, so Colleen saw a play and saw an arrangement of it that was a cappella, very slow in a play, and wanted to do something like it, but there wasn't written sheet music. So she brought the piano, standard that you can purchase to me, and there are chord changes, and I could hear the harmony in the notated melody. So I just wrote that out, split it in four parts, mostly, and handed it to the group, and we learned it. Awesome. Very sweet. It's powerful. I think it's tender.
Yeah. She makes it sound so easy, doesn't she?
Well, no. There's a logic to it, but it's been fun.
How much time do you spend practicing for a performance like this?
Well, we have weekly rehearsals that began in February, I believe. We had our music before that, so we're expected to learn a lot of this ourselves. It is entirely memorized, so it does require quite a bit of time on our own, but additionally, then we have an hour and a half weekly. I think most of us honestly look forward to those rehearsals together. It's because we enjoy one another's company, and there's something about blending our voices that is very energizing and therapeutic.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to be said about singing.
I heard recently that when you are singing, it's one of the one times your mind is silent. You can't think your crazy daily thoughts when you're singing. You don't have to, and it's such a lovely break from that. There's a peace that comes from making those different sounds together, and it's higher. It's an elevated space to be in with each other. It's It's good. Yeah.
So, I mean, is that like every week, or do you just like February for your June show, and then maybe start in September again for your December show?
Correct. Yes. Right. Yes. So we average about 16 songs, I would say, with each concert, and so we have a package essentially of the 16 songs that we will work on for that particular concert that's coming up. Then a lot of those songs are also applicable to other instances, like yesterday, the Memorial Day services. Colleen chose songs that were purposeful for the address that Nan Worrell, the mayor, brought. So it all fits together.
All right, and then any of the proceeds that you make from the concerts goes, what, just into the sheet music? And
we do buy our sheet music with those proceeds, but additionally, we donate a portion to one of the nonprofits. In this instance, it is the Christian Center's food bank that we'll be donating to. Grocery prices being where they are, we thought that it was an appropriate location for that donation.
And then Colleen receives a small stipend, I'm thinking.
She does not.
No? Does it all on her own, just like all of you, huh?
Yes, that is correct. She is extremely generous.
Yeah, it's a lot of time.
I believe so.
Anything else you want to mention? Again, it's this Sunday, June 1st, Park City Community Church, 4 p.m. Tickets will be available on sale prior to, but if you get a discount by going online.
That's correct.
Okay, anything else, ladies?
I don't know. Just enjoy spring and sing your way through it.
Yes, and we hope that we see a lot of people on Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay, Renee, Jenny, thanks for your time.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Studio now with a look at our summer lodging. The CEO of Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau, Jennifer Wesselhoff. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Happy kickoff to summer.
Yeah, yay. It looks like you have the final numbers from this ski season. So how did we do? I mean, National Skiers Association reporting second best year ever.
Yeah, I'm really pleased with how we ended up with the ski season this season. Looking back at the last 6 months, we show occupancy finished at almost 50% occupancy average for those 6 months, which was up just about 2%. And average daily rates for those properties were also up about 3%. So we're seeing just moderate 2 to 3% growth in occupancy and rates for the season. Overall, solid numbers. I think we had a good season, despite some of the challenges that we saw over that season. But we're really excited. We're excited about the kickoff for summer. We're looking really strong for the summer season, and I'm anxious to share some of those numbers with you, too.
Yeah, let's take a look, kind of forward-leaning. Again, these are projected numbers at this point.
Exactly, and these numbers are based off of the most recent data I have is through the end of April. So just basically finishing up the season here as of April 30th, looking forward, the next 6 months on average are pace. So these are reservations on the books. And remember, this is from our Destametrics reporting properties. It's about 20 properties in the Park City Summit County area, which represents about 2,500 total units, which is just less than about 50%. So we always use this report sort of as a trend line, but definitely not an absolute. So looking forward the next 6 months, right now we are ahead of pace with reservations on the books by almost 11%. So really solid bookings for the upcoming 6 months, and rates are up just a little bit as well, about 2%. So overall looking pretty good.
Okay, and so when we look at lodging tallies up about 2% for the ski season, how did these kind of numbers impact the Summit County tax collections?
Well, that's really where the rubber meets the road. We watch those numbers very carefully, especially in our tourism-related taxes. Now, keep in mind that those Summit County taxes are always lagging in performance. So the numbers that I have for Summit County tax collections, is April data. So it's the first 4 months of the county's calendar year. But these numbers really represent February performance. So you have to kind of think back. April numbers reflect February performance. Local sales taxes for February, most of those tourism tax categories were down slightly in February. Local tax sales taxes down about 13%. Restaurant taxes were flat. TRT was down 7%. And also recreation, arts, and parks were down about 8%. Now, when you look at those 4 months of year to date, so those first 4 months of the year compared to last year, we're also seeing some leveling off. Local sales taxes down 4%, restaurant taxes up just slightly, TRT down 8%, and recreation, arts, and parks down about 3%.
So how does that work, though? And even though lodging and room rates up, the tax dollars are down?
Yeah, you know, we're looking at that pretty carefully. Now, remember, our numbers are for Destinometrics types of lodging properties. Generally speaking, these are the types of ski-in, ski-out properties, and they represent, like I said, just about 50% of the total inventory. So what that tells me in looking at the data is that, generally speaking, those higher-end ski-in, ski-out, resort-based properties are performing a little bit better than the average property, the more standalone hotel sort of property. The more moderate types of properties maybe aren't performing as well as some of the real mountain-based properties.
Okay, and you haven't seen these numbers go down, though, in a long time. Any concern to you?
October will be 5 years that I've been here in Park City now. And while we see some fluctuation month to month compared to the previous year, overall, we're seeing incredible growth. In fact, last year was the first year that the transient room tax collections, which is that tax that overnight visitors spend, has reached a record number at over 19 million. We expect this year to also be very similar. We don't expect to go down. We don't expect to go much higher than a 1-2% increase next year. So we're definitely seeing some leveling off, but I just don't think it's reasonable or sustainable to consider double-digit growth as we've had in the last several years.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to talk about lodging numbers? It looks like another successful Wasatch-backed economic summit. Let's talk a little bit just about some of the highlights and takeaways for you.
Oh, it was such a great event. We held that event on May 13th, and that was in conjunction with the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce. And it was a full-day event. Almost 400 people attended that event with us. This year we hosted it at the Grand Hyatt Deer Valley, which really allowed us to expand the attendance. For years and years, we've been selling out of that event at about a 250 number attendance. This year, we're able to reach just under the 400 number attendee. And it was such a powerful day. We had three really interesting keynote speakers that were with us during that day, which really focused on labor supply. It focused on federal policies and how those policies are impacting us on the ground. And then there was an AI final keynote speaker who was incredibly informative.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit, because the morning guy, Rob Hetrick, so interesting what he talked about with our labor surprise. I think supply. I think a lot of people were surprised by that.
I read his report, I want to say, back in November last year, and I was so interested in it and thought, this information, especially given the amount of growth in jobs that we're having in the Wasatch Back area and really in Utah in general, that this would be such an informative session for our attendees. Rob Hetrick, he's the senior labor economist for Lightcast Data, which we share a lot of Lightcast data on our website if folks are interested in seeing the number of jobs, the types of jobs, population growth, all of great economic dashboard data available on parkcitychamber.com. But he works for that company, and he was the author of a report that set, that was the demographic drought and the rising storm. And he talks about the changes in our workforce. Some of the really interesting statistics that he shared was really around the growth of the workforce, mostly from 1970 to 1990, and how that is changing today. So he talks a lot of, he talked a lot about how the pandemic impacted our workforce shortage, where our labor force participation dropped so intensely by 5 million people leaving the workforce in 2020. 80% of them were over the age of 55. He also talked about how the prime age male participants in the workforce is also declining rapidly. So he talked a lot about how this is impacting our workforce, especially when many occupations, especially in the skilled trades, rely on men, that those jobs are 90% male, but that participation in the workforce is declining. And then what he talked about how education and folks, kids going to college and graduating from college is not necessarily aligning with the types of jobs that are available. One of the interesting statistics that he shared was that almost 70% of the labor force now has a degree, but only 60%, or he said, but 60% of the open jobs available don't require a degree. So there's this really interesting misalignment, and he really talked about some potential solutions on how we as a country can start to address this mismatch in labor supply and labor demand.
It really was fascinating. You have posted the audio on the website, but is there an opportunity to look through some of his slides as well?
The presentation should also be on the website, so visitors who are looking and listening, and thank you to KPCW for sponsoring the event and recording all of the sessions for us. You'll have to follow on your own through the slideshows. So the decks are also online. I think they're pretty easy to follow along, but, and you can also go online and check out his report. It is absolutely intriguing.
It really is. I want to, you had a number of state lawmakers attend the event. I don't know if they were there just to check out the Grand Hyatt or they really wanted to be part of this. But who was there, and it, what kind of feedback did you get from them?
We're working really, really hard to engage our elected officials at every level in Utah. Senator Winterton had the chance to join us for the morning session. Representative Auxier, who's our, and Representative Nugent were both there. We had representatives from Senator Lee's office and Congressman Curtis's office. So it was really great to have the opportunity for them to come and hear from, you know, our people on the ground about what issues we're facing here in the Wasatch Back. And they're really engaged and they care deeply about what's happening here. I'm not sure if we actually came up with any great solutions, but the idea of this, the topic and theme of this year's event was embracing understanding, empowering our future. So really sort of level setting what's happening in our communities, what's happening in Utah, what's happening in at the federal level, and really trying to understand the why and how that we got to this place in our country and in our state, and really then empowering our future, using that data to empower positive advocacy and policy issues moving forward. So we're really pleased that we had such great attendance from those elected officials and our local officials too.
Yeah. So you start planning then again for next year already?
Not yet. We're still debriefing, and the survey is still open for folks who attended. We really care about what our attendees thought about the event. I think one of the things that we learned is that maybe a full day event is a little too much to ask of our attendees, and we might have to shorten that and make it a half day or maybe through lunch.
Yeah, because you did see kind of a drop-off by the time that the last speaker came on.
We did, yeah.
Yeah. All right, just another minute here. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about the Wasatch-backed Business University coming up. What's the topic here?
The topic here is business analytics and data decision-making. So this will be held on June 4th. It's going to be held in Heber this year. This month. This is an opportunity that we're really partnering and trying to find more ways to partner with Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce. So this is a free event. Registration is required. It's a lunchtime event, 11:30 to 1. And it's really about how can you use the data that's available, interpret the data, and really design impactful surveys that you can use to really have a more productive and more intentional programming for your business. So that's June 4th. You can register at parkcitychamber.com.
Okay, Jennifer, talk to you next month. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.